The cortege has arrived. Originally entering into the enormously impressive rotunda here at the Capitol building under the Great Dome were two clergymen. They were followed by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, led by the Chief of the Joint Chief, General Maxwell Taylor. With him were Admiral David L. McDonnell, the Chief of Naval Operations, General Earl C. Wheeler, the Army Chief of Staff, General Curtis LeMay, the Air Force Chief of Staff, General David M. Shoup, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, and the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Admiral Edward J. Rowland. As you were told a moment ago, the casket, flag-draped, is now lying on the catafalque that was originally built and occupied by another assassinated president, President Abraham Lincoln, in the year 1865. The head of the casket is pointing west, opposite from the direction which the pallbearers entered. At the head of the president is the American flag, and just to one side of that is the presidential flag. As you were told a moment ago, the family entered. Mrs. John Kennedy, dressed in black, looking extremely sorrowful, Sergeant Shriver, the other members of the family present, also with the family, is the new president of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson. I see the actor, Mr. Peter Lawford, and his lady, and proceeding on around the room as the cortege continues to take its place. We find members of the United States Supreme Court, Justice Clark, Justice Stewart, the Chief Justice of the United States. We also find in the same group members of the President's Cabinet, whom the new President has asked to continue in office, Secretary of Labor Wirtz, Secretary of Commerce Hodges, Secretary of Agriculture Freeman. The pallbearers have just made a salute at the side of the casket and are proceeding slowly at their 100 pace a minute walk back out the east entrance from whence they came, back to the outside of the rotunda. We see also prominently before us, and walking to the microphone, is Mike Mansfield of Montana, the majority floor leader of the United States Senate.
President and Mrs. Johnson, Mrs. Kennedy, members of the Kennedy family, my fellow Americans, all. There was the sound of laughter, and in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a wit in a man, neither young nor old, but a wit full of an old man's wisdom and a child's wisdom. And then, in a moment, it was no more. And so she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a man marked with the scars of his love of country, a body active with the surge of a life far from spent. And in a moment, it was no more. And so she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a father with a little boy and a little girl, and the joy of each in the other, and in a moment, It was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a husband who asked much and gave much. And out of the giving and the asking, wove with a woman what could not be broken in life, and in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands and kissed him and closed the lid of the coffin. A piece of each of us died at that moment. Yet in death, he gave of himself to us. He gave us of a good heart from which the laughter came. He gave us of a profound wit from which a great leadership emerged. He gave us of a kindness and a strength fused into the human courage to seek peace without fear. He gave us of his love that we too in turn might give. He gave that we might give of ourselves, that we might give to one another until there would be no room, no room at all for the bigotry, the hatred, the prejudice, and the arrogance which converged in that moment of horror to strike him down. In leaving us these gifts, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President of the United States, leaves with us. Will we take them, Mr. President? Will we have now the sense and the responsibility and the courage to take them? I pray to God that we shall, and under God, we will.
Mr. President, Mr. Johnson,
the Chief Justice of the United States,
members of the Kennedy family, and my fellow Americans, there are few events in our national life that so unite Americans, so touch the hearts of all of us, as the passing of a President of the United States. There is nothing that adds shock to our sadness more than the assassination of our leader, chosen as he is to embody the ideals of our people, the faith we have in our institutions, and our belief in the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. Such misfortunes have befallen the nation on other occasions, but never more shockingly than 2 days ago. We are saddened. We are stunned. We are perplexed. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, a great and good president, the friend of all people of goodwill, a believer in the dignity and equality of all human beings, a fighter for justice, an apostle of peace, has been snatched from our midst by the bullet of an assassin. What moved some misguided wretch to do this horrible deed may never be known to us. But we do know that such acts are commonly stimulated by forces of hatred and malevolence, such as today are eating their way into the bloodstream of American life. What a price we pay for this fanaticism. It has been said that the only thing we learn from history is that we do not learn. But surely we can learn if we have the will to do so. Surely there is a lesson to be learned from this tragic event. If we really love this country, if we truly love justice and mercy, if we fervently want to make this nation better for those who are to follow us, we can at least abjure the hatred that consumes people, the false accusations that divide us, and the bitterness that begets violence. Is it too much to hope that the martyrdom of our beloved president might even soften the hearts of those who would themselves recoil from assassination, but who do not shrink from spreading the venom which kindles thoughts of it in others? Our nation is bereaved. The whole world is poorer because of his loss. But we can all be better Americans because John Fitzgerald Kennedy has passed our way. Because he has been our chosen leader at a time in history when his character, his vision, and his quiet courage have enabled him to chart a course for us, a safe course for us, through the shoals of treacherous seas that encompass the world. And now that he is relieved of the almost superhuman burden we imposed on him, may he rest in peace.
That was the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, Earl Warren of California, stepping to the microphone. Now, John McCormick, the Speaker of the lower
House. President and Mrs. Johnson, Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy, and the other bereaved members of our beloved president, former President Truman, Reverend clergy, and my fellow Americans. As we gather here today, bowed in grief, the heartfelt sympathy of the members of the Congress and of our people are extended to Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy and to Ambassador and Mrs. Joseph P. Kennedy and their loved ones. Their deep grief is also shared by countless of millions of persons throughout the world. Considered a personal tragedy, as if one had lost a loved member of his own immediate family. Any citizen of our beloved country who looks back over its history cannot fail to see that we have been blessed with God's favor beyond most other peoples. At each great crisis in our history, we have found a leader able to grasp the helm of state and guide the country through the troubles which beset it. In our earliest days, when our strength and wealth were so limited and our problems so great, Washington and Jefferson appeared to lead our people. Two generations later, when our country was torn in two by a fratricidal war, Abraham Lincoln appeared from the mass of the people as a leader able to reunite the nation. In more recent times, in the critical days of the Depression and the Great War forced upon us by fascist aggression, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and later Harry S. Truman appeared on the scene to reorganize the country and lead its revived citizens to victory. Finally, only recently, when the Cold War was building up to the supreme crisis of a threatened nuclear war, capable of destroying everything and everybody that our predecessors had so carefully built and which a free, liberty-loving world wanted, once again, a strong and courageous man appeared ready to lead us. No country need despair, so long as God in his infinite goodness continues to provide the nation with leaders able to guide it through the successive crises which seem to be the inevitable fate of any great nation. Surely no country ever faced more gigantic problems than ours in the last few years, and surely no country could have obtained a more able leader in a time of crisis. President John Fitzgerald Kennedy possessed all the qualities of greatness. He had deep faith, complete confidence, human sympathy, and broad vision which recognized the true values of freedom, equality, and brotherhood, which have always been the marks of the American political dream. He had the bravery and the sense of personal duty, which made him willing to face up to the great task of being president in these trying times. He had the warmth and the sense of humor, which made the burden of the task bearable for himself and for his associates, and which made all kinds of diverse peoples and races eager to be associated with him in his task. He had the tenacity and determination to carry each stage of his great work through to its successful conclusion. Now that our great leader has been taken from us in a cruel death, we are bound to feel shattered and helpless in the face of our loss. This is but natural, but as the first bitter pangs of our incredulous grief begins to pass, we must thank God that we were privileged, however briefly, to have had this great man for our president. For he has now taken his place among the great figures of world history. While this is an occasion of deep sorrow, it should be also one of dedication. We must have the determination to unite and carry on the spirit of John Fitzgerald Kennedy for a strengthened America and for a future world of peace.
That was Speaker of the House John McCormick of Massachusetts, the home state of the former president. Stepping forward now, ladies and gentlemen, the new president of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson, with the help of one of the armed sentinels, placing a wreath at the foot of the casket of the now deceased president. The wreath is placed there. The new president bows his head silently for a moment, turns, walks away, back to the position where he was, back of the family. Mrs. Kennedy, the deceased president's wife, walks to the side of the casket, kneels, dressed in black as she is. She kisses the side of the casket. She rises, brushes her veil lightly back from the left side of her head, proceeds back to the family position where she was standing. She has the hand of daughter Caroline in hers. A remarkable example of courage we've seen in the ex-president's lady, such as seldom as ever has been witnessed in these United States. The members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff are now filing out the east entrance where they filed in a moment ago. The members of the family follow immediately behind.
No, I do not. But I can see where they're going.
President Johnson and Lady Bird following behind the immediate family. The two clergymen moving forward to assume positions on either side of the east entrance, on the outside of which are the great steps to the Capitol. The very prominent group which is here is beginning to file slowly out, covering one half of the circle of the great rotunda here under the dome. Completely on the opposite side of this were virtually the entire lower house of the Congress of the United States, members of the House of Representatives, where 14 years ago, President John F. Kennedy began his political career in Washington, subsequently to be a member of the upper house, the Senate of the United States, and immediately in front of us, as we look out across this most touching scene, we see virtually the entire membership of the United States Senate. I'm viewing in front of me Senator Strom Thurmond, Senator Keating, Strom Thurmond of South Carolina, Senator Keating of New York, Senator Dominic of Colorado, Senator Church of Idaho, Senator Dodd of Connecticut, Senator McGovern of South Dakota, Senator Yarbrough of Texas, where the tragic incident occurred. He was in the parade in Dallas just 2 short days ago when tragedy struck the American nation in the form of the assassination of the president. Members of the cabinet now filing out. Secretary of Defense McNamara, Secretary of Labor Wirtz, Secretary Freeman of the Department of Agriculture.
I just wanted to observe there, Russell, that former President Harry Truman and his daughter, Margaret, Mrs. Daniel, are leaving by the south entrance to the rotunda, one of the four entrances to this great circular room.
Looking very moved, very touched, I saw the ex-president when he entered the room, the old war horse, as they refer to him, veteran of many political wars. With him, of course, was his daughter, Margaret. The president was on the verge of tears. I think they were welling up in his eyes as he walked out. The prominent members of the World Diplomatic Corps, members of the press, the United States Senate, the military sentinels which are here, the guard from the Irish Army, members of Congress, the electronic press, the paper press, so many prominent people. They're all beginning to file out now, and in just a little bit, when this part of the ceremonies are over and the room is emptied, then the public will be permitted to enter and view the casket containing the dead president. They'll enter four by four abreast and will separate into twos as they come to the casket and file on through the rotunda. And now we return you to our Voice of America studios.